Good morning. My name is Stan. I guess I should say good afternoon by now. This case arises from the immigration court, a decision of the immigration judge. Mr. Isaac was first convicted of residential burglary and got a sentence of probation. And the immigration court then said that it was an aggravated felony, and therefore he could not apply for asylum or withholding of deportation. What the court failed to recognize is that the original sentence for burglary was merely 2 years probation.
But why should we look at the original sentence when the statute talks about looking at the aggregate sentence and he gets 5 years eventually?
Well, he didn't get 5 years for the sentence. He got 5 years for violation of probation.
That's the same thing. He's resentenced. You know, it happens all the time in our courts. It's not a new proceeding. If somebody violates terms of supervised release and has to come back and they wind up spending more time in prison, that's all considered part of the original proceeding.
No, it isn't.
Under Illinois law, it's not a new case. Sometimes there are prosecutions under new cases too.
Illinois law says a probation revocation proceeding is not a criminal adjudication of the defendant's guilt or innocence. It is.
That's been established already.
Pardon me?
That has been established already. His guilt.
Yes, right. And it is a civil proceeding, and that the defendant need not be indicted, prosecuted, or convicted of the offense supporting the petition for revocation.
Right. So you don't have to worry about the reasonable doubt standard or all of that. But for purposes of immigration law, to see what's your aggregate sentence, your aggregate term of imprisonment for the underlying offense, you need to look at everything. That's what aggregate means.
That's not what
one
of the
federal one, statute.
Section 43A says that burglary is an aggravated felony if he's gotten 1 year or more in prison. That was for the crime, not for the violation of probation.
Do you have a single immigration case or federal case that has ruled this way?
No, I do not.
You do
but,
not.
There,
yeah.
but there are no cases.
The,
all the cases that the government cites, which says that it's an aggregated put together, are done under the various state or federal statutes.
It seems to me, looking at this case as a whole, that your client can't get asylum because he committed an aggravated felony, and he can't get withholding of removal because it was a, quote, particularly serious offense because of the 5 years. That leaves you with the Convention Against Torture, as to which there's an interesting question whether we have jurisdiction to review that or not. If we do have jurisdiction to review it, there's a finding that the evidence is insufficient. So maybe you might want to just jump to the very end of that and explain to us why, if we actually reach the CAT point, the evidence here was so compelling that we should disagree with the immigration authorities.
Well, we know from the State Department reports that Syrian Christians are being persecuted by the Iraqi government and various organizations in the Iraqi government and in the nation. There are Syrian Christians that are being killed, priests are being beheaded, and that Syrian Christians are forced into various communities and cannot find jobs. The churches are being burned and destroyed, and that
What are the dates of this evidence? I mean, this was certainly true under Saddam Hussein, but how recent are these incidents? Now, obviously, there's a lot of violence there, but in terms of persecution that can be attributed to the government, either because it condones it or because it's just helpless to prevent it, how recent has this been going on?
The last human rights
your brief doesn't indicate anything about the dates, I don't think.
Stuff is happening. Last report that I saw, which we pulled about a week ago, was the State Department human rights reports for 2009. Which reflects what's going on.
The only report you mention is the International Religious Freedom Report, but there's no date.
We weren't in the case at the time of the hearing.
In the record on December 17, 2008, but you don't say when the report was compiled.
The last one was in 2009, reflecting the conditions that went on in Iraq in 2008.
I'm looking at 2008. You mentioned something called the International Religious Freedom Report. That's what you cite in your brief, and I'm wondering when was that report?
That was reported in 2008, for conditions occurring in 2007. The State Department report.
All right, you're right. It says 2008. You're correct. Yeah.
Right. The State Department report was conditions that were reporting in conditions of 2008. When the report came out, I believe in February or March of 2009, talking about how persecution of Assyrian Christians are still going on in that country.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Horn. Mr. Sanfordino.
May it please the Court. Richard Zampini on behalf of the respondent. Petitioner did not argue to the board below what he's arguing to this court now. He did not argue to the board that because he was resentenced for probation, that didn't apply to the 5 years. As such, he's failed to exhaust that argument. He hasn't given the board a chance to rule on that argument. The argument he made, and because of that failure to exhaust, the court is without jurisdiction to rule on the petition for review and should dismiss it. As it happens, even if he did argue that this to the board, it fails, as the court has noted. And as we cite in our brief, the resentencing was a broken trust on the part of petitioner when he violated his probation, and that caused the resentencing for 5 years for burglary. Petitioner has conceded that he was an alien convicted of an aggravated felony. As such, Your Honor, as you mentioned, he has lost the opportunity to apply for asylum. His five-year sentence means he's lost the opportunity to apply for withholding of removal under the INA. Those two alone, coupled with his criminal conviction, under this court's Petrov decision, prevent him from reaching a merit-based challenge to his CAT claim, to his conviction.
Now, here is something, though. I mean, Petrov addresses one aspect of that bar on review. But I'm not sure, Petrov, suppose you had a case in which you had somebody like Mr. Isaac who was ineligible for whatever reason for both asylum and for withholding. But, you know, maybe the person is from Zimbabwe and Robert Mugabe has personally said, you know, if Mr. Jones ever returns to Zimbabwe, I'm going to put him on the rack and rip him from limb to limb while he screams in agony or whatever. I mean, you have very solid evidence. Is it your position that this person has no right to challenge a rejection of a CAT claim?
Your Honor, he would have to, under the INA, generate a question of law or a constitutional claim. And if
right.
there was
and
something...
Here's my thought about that question, because what the statute, the jurisdiction statute, says is no court shall have jurisdiction to review any final order of removal against an alien who is removable by reason of having committed a criminal offense, et cetera. But CAT is part of the law of the United States now, too, and it seems to me the deferral procedures that are applicable to CAT people make such an individual not removable. There's a question of what the question of law is, what does it mean to be removable by reason of these various provisions? What's the scope of that legal disqualification to review?
That does seem there is an open question on that particular point, Your Honor, but of course here petitioner's the case, of course, with petitioner was not made up of any real specifics, nothing nearly as the Robert Mugabe situation.
Exactly, and the difference would be, in fact, I was interested, so I looked up in the Executive Office for Immigration Review book. It's not like you'd have a flood of cases if you wound up with some review of these cases. Since in fiscal year 2008, there were 501 CAT cases out of a total of 27,137 cases. And of those, a certain number of people did get either withholding or deferral. So I think the difference is, would we, in the case that I'm describing, actually have the authority to look at this man's reasons? Now, once we look at his reasons, I think there's a real issue about whether he's tied any of these problems to state action and so on. I mean, you know, you've made...
And, Your Honor, I would say that we have not, because we haven't briefed the specific question about whether or not the court could reach the deferral issue, part of the issue is I'm hesitant to say with any sort of definiteness that the court could reach the question about whether or not if there was monumental evidence saying that he would be tortured if he returned, but he was subject to a deferral of removal order under the regulations, whether or not that would actually constitute an order of removal, since I don't believe the board has addressed that.
That's the legal issue that interests me here, which, you know, Mr. Isak's case, as I think you say, may not be the one that really presents that, but I find it kind of ghastly to think that in the Mugabe hypothetical, I suggest to you that no doors are open and we can just send people back into the jaws of torture.
Well, Your Honor, I think an alien might have an option, though, if he did have Robert Mugabe saying, when Mr. Jones comes back, I'm going to put him on the rack. And an immigration judge and the board both looked at that and said, we don't think that's good enough evidence, then he might have at least a colorable due process claim that he could try and raise and say, well, someone must not have had their interpreter working that day, or at least there may be an out through due process under the constitutional exception. Again, this is all, it's I don't know that it's completely shut for an alien. I think in this case, of course, we do think it is shut for the petition in this case.
Even if we were to reach the merits of his CAT claim.
Yes, Your Honor.
That it's not going
to. The IJ is required, is he not, to look at the International Religious Freedom Report?
That's correct, Your Honor. In fact, the International Religious Freedom Report was actually presented by the DHS at record page 69 and 70. And then the immigration judge mentioned it at record page 80 as well.
So the question is whether or not he looked at it.
Yes. Well, petitioner is arguing that he didn't afford proper weight to it, which we think is trouble for petitioner because, again, once you're dealing with the weight of...
I understand.
Yes, Your Honor.
So you don't think there is even a question as to whether he actually looked at it?
Oh, no, Your Honor. Now, we think the record bears that out.
I see. Suppose there was a question as to whether he looked at it. Could that be a due process violation?
Well, Your Honor, there is case law that does suggest that the board doesn't have to, or the immigration judge, issue an exegesis on every piece of evidence and hit on every piece of evidence.
Here he's required to look at this piece of evidence.
That's correct, Your Honor. And if it had not even been, let's say it hadn't been introduced by the DHS, and there had been an overlooking of even mentioning that he had it, then there might be a greater claim on the part of an alien in that type of hypothetical.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Zanfordino. Mr. Horn, your time has expired, but if you have anything further, I'll give you a minute.
Counsel, did opposing counsel just characterize your position correctly? Are you arguing that the IJ didn't give appropriate weight to this report?
That's correct.
Or that he did not look at it?
Both. He didn't look at it, so he couldn't give obvious weight to it. And then also he didn't look at the State Department report. Now, I was not the counsel at the lower court or even at the BIA.
How do you interpret the record to support your view that he didn't even look at it?
Because he found that the respondent's testimony was credible as far as his fear is concerned. But... whether I don't know what he looked at because the record isn't clear as to what he looked at or how he interpreted it. The judge's failure to review this piece of evidence is clearly under the Immigration Act error and should be sent back for review to determine whether or not there is a basis that Mr. Isak falls under the CAT convention. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, both counsel.